Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Oh, I love doing that. I'm Susan Applegate Krause. I'm the director of the American Indian Studies Program, and it is my great pleasure to be introducing our guest speaker tonight, or this afternoon. The first thing, though, that I like to do, and that is traditional for us to do in American Indian Studies, is that we acknowledge the people on whose traditional land we are meeting. And that's the Three Fires people, the Ojibwe, Odawa, and Potawatomi. These are the people who originally inhabited this land. These are some of the people who still live on this land, and we are grateful that they share that land with us. So, Diane Glancy. If you've looked at her website, which is dianeglancy.com, it's a little overwhelming. She has multiple publications of novels, short stories and essays, poetry. I mean, it's a really impressive list. Now, she did just mention to me that she's been at this for a long time, but I don't think that's the only reason why she has such a wonderful, wonderful array of published work. I think it's because her work is wonderful, good, readable, exciting, interesting, poetic, dramatic, and I think we're going to see a great deal of that in tonight's presentation, which is her first foray into filmmaking. So just a little bit of background, a few facts here. Diane's MFA is from the University of Iowa. Her MA is in English, and BA is from University of Central Oklahoma, and her BA is in English Literature from the University of Missouri. She taught for a number of years at McAllister College in St. Paul and has recently retired and moved to be closer to family in Kansas City. Just in 2009, she published two novels, kind of just puts the rest of us to shame. One of them is The Reason for Crows, a novel of Kateri Tekawitha, and the other is Pushing the Bear After the Trail of Tears, which is a follow-up to her 1999 novel, Pushing the Bear, a novel of the Trail of Tears. Is that right? Did I get that title right? She also has, as I mentioned, numerous stories and essays in a variety of collections. She has 14 published collections of her own poetry. And I also noticed on her website that she has things in progress in each of these categories, too. So it's a really, really terrific presentation of her work. And I would urge you to go check out the website and learn more about all her books. We do have some books here from the library's collection, which I would invite you to come and look at after the presentation, so you have a better sense, and then you can check them out. Or better yet, go order some on Amazon.com and buy them. So without further ado, let me turn this over and to Diane, and if you would help me welcome Diane Glancy.
Thank you very much, Susan and Michael. I'm going to talk about filmmaking tonight. This sounds loud. It's a project in which I have just entered. It's like going into a scary wilderness without a map, without shoes, without a gun. We were sitting around talking one evening, and I said, no, I really feel like I've been asked to drive a 747 when I've only had instructions on flying a crop duster. So what do I say? I did it, or I am into it now. And I'm also, you're going to see 10 minutes of the clip tonight of what I've made. I mean, it was amazing the way things fell together. Wes Studi had to leave a day early to go to the opening of Avatar in Los Angeles. I mean, here he was, the leader of the whole indigenous nation in that film. And he was in Visay, Oklahoma, on the back roads making this little film for a very pittance. One night I was watching Charlie Rose, and he had on Werner Herzog, who had made the Fitzcarraldo. And while he was doing that film, he started keeping a diary. And so I started writing some words too. And I'm going to read the beginning of this journal before we see the film. I mean, not that I'm making the Fitzcarraldo, which took the steamboat over the hill to another river, but it feels that way when you're on your own. Making an independent film I have wanted to make. And it has a little epigraph. I threw a stone at Goliath, the doubt that I could make a film. Dreams are dangerous. They uncover your bones. They bleed you. Dreams are a swarm of insects, I remember on a summer evening moving over the yard. They fly independent of one another, yet belong together as a group. Their cohesiveness is in their brokenness, hovering on the edge of darkness and back. This swarm is what a film is. My Aunt Martha Pettitore has died. I divide her estate between the six nephews and nieces. I pay off the loan on my little, modest house. I have a portion left, not enough to make an independent film that I have wanted to make, but enough to start, to get into it. She was an I shall not be moved Christian. She and Uncle Lou had no children. They lived a quiet, sparing life. That was her word, we must be sparing. The dining room furniture they had all their lives had been his mother's. They were married over 50 years when Uncle Lou died. They would not approve of this independent film. I can hear them say, do not use our money for this. But all the way from heaven, I heard them. But I have a dream and I have a vision. And by the way, I'd gone to a lot of places where you can apply to make independent film. You know, they give you funds. Well, every place I went, everybody was real young and cool looking. And I just sat there and I never did get any of the grants. And I thought I would never get my film made. I've had this script since 1998. It was written from a book called Flutie. And that very year, I had a fellowship to the Sundance Native American Screenwriters Workshop, and I went there and wrote the script. So that's how long it was, over 10 years. It was in my files, and once in a while, I'd open my file to get something else, and there was that script. And I'd get it out and change a word or two, and it was all so hopeless. I mean, making a film really is like climbing a mountain with a steamboat on your back. Now, once I had this little pile of money, now I am thinking how to get into this. Off the gutter on the porch, drips of rain fall on large wet leaves, like the snap of fingers, or like a rock in the tire tread that makes a steady snap when the car is on the road. Everywhere I go, I think how to do this. I wake at 3 in the morning. What am I doing? What has caused me to do this? I don't know how to make a film. I don't know how to direct. There are other places I need the money. Where did this dream come from? Is it madness? Senility at the end of my life? A wrong turn into the grandiose, or at least impracticality? But in the Psalms, as elsewhere in the Bible, I find the impossible can be accomplished. I really learned to rely on faith, by the way, through this nightmare, I want to call it, though it wasn't that at all. I will see it when I believe it, this film on the hot plate, so much against it. Funding, funding, and funding are the components of filmmaking. But things began to fall in place. People are willing to act in it. I offered Wes Studi $5,000 to come for a week. He makes that much in an hour on other things. What moved him to do that? I have all these unanswered questions. People are willing to act in it. People are willing to donate. I still wake with a mystery of how it will be met. I am needy. I am needy. That is Psalm 109, verse 22. That is the supplication of anyone making a film. I read Conquest of the Useless, The Making of the Fitzcarraldo by Werner Herzog, after I saw him on Charlie Rose one night, about the difficulties of filmmaking, including moving a steamboat over a steep incline to the river on the other side. I also feel like I am pulling a steamboat up a hill. I have repeated that, but believe me, every day I felt that. My parents and former husband would tell me I can't do it if they were here. I know I am up against something bigger than myself, something more than I can do. I visit my brother. Do it before you won't be able to, he says. Do it while you still can. Do it before I'm too old, before I forget which side of the road to drive on. In November 2009, I am on my way to Visalia, Oklahoma to find location. I-35 south, then west across Oklahoma. It's about an 8-hour trip from my house. A flock of birds fly over the interstate. The birds are a small constellation in the sky, only they are black and the sky is now light. Along the road, I see hedge apples in a tree. The leaves have fallen. The bright green orbs hang from the trees like the constellation in the sky, like a flock of birds caught in the branches. They are the same swarm formation I remember in insects. I decide December 7th through the 14th, we will begin shooting. One actor has to leave the 15th, that was Wes, another the 16th, another can't arrive till after the 3rd, another can't arrive until the 7th. The airport in Oklahoma City is 3 hours away. That is 6 hours round trip for whoever picks up the actors. I don't have drivers. I don't have a camera crew. I drive to Visalia, Oklahoma again. The Dewey County Sheriff and the Assistant District Court Judge agree to be in the film. You'll see them. The Visalia High School principal says I can film there. The public relations officer at Southwestern Oklahoma State University in Weatherford says I can film there. I visit the Visalia nursing home to ask if I can use a room for Franklin's hospital scene. It is pouring rain. They agree. I visit the Visalia restaurant, the only one in town, and they ask if they can provide meals in their back room. Visalia has about 700 people. This film is about a small family, ordinary life, struggling for education, struggling for economic survival. Housing also is difficult. There is no motel at all in Visalia. The closest one, I don't want to get off track here, the closest ones are 20 to 30 minutes away in Leedy and Sealing and Woodward. I don't want to waste travel time each day. I will look into trailer rental, which I decide against because they would have had to been brought from Oklahoma City. What if it snows? What if it's overcast while we're there? What if? What if? I think of all the lovely days that have passed since I have wanted to make this film. Now I get into it again at the last part of the year, probably the worst time to make a film. In Weatherford, where the Southwestern Oklahoma State is, where Flutie finally goes to college, I stand at the fence at the north end of 7th Street, looking back toward Visalia, where the main character wants to run from college. I stand there at the rested gate before I feel her with me, before I feel the rested fields of Oklahoma's red soil in the distance. I see the wind bending the row of weeds by the fence, hissing through a gnarled tree and the spruce bush. It's when you begin to feel one with the land and your character that I kept thinking there was a possibility that this impossibility might happen. I leave Visalia in the afternoon to drive back to Kansas City, some 8 hours away. I stop at the salt plains where Flutie goes with her father and brother. I knew it had rained. The sandy road seamed hands that pull at the car. I hurry over the wettest places to get through them. I see the return of clouds on the western horizon. After standing at the salt plains, I drive to get back to Highway 64 before it rains again and the car gets bogged down in sand. The prospect of filmmaking is getting sucked into the wet, sandy soil of the road, but I feel commissioned to bring together something that would happen. I wake morning seeing the scenes and hearing dialogue. Often when we were stuck or I didn't have it developed enough, I would wake up in the morning and I would know exactly what to write down. I did feel commissioned. I felt that there was something stronger than I was when I was at that. I wanted to pass over a little bit of this because I want to see the film. I've never seen it on a big screen before, which will be set down. There was a place, and I would read the Bible too. There was a place where Jesus walks on the sea, and I concluded filmmaking is a stroll on the sea. Notes from a church bulletin way back in July, I find in my files, What is the Moral Dilemma of the Dome of Heaven? By the way, that's the name of my film. I didn't realize when I wrote this book that Doug Flutie was a football player. And so I didn't want that confusion. So I knew that the film, I didn't want to call it Flutie. So it's called The Dome of Heaven because the western Oklahoma sky sits like a dome over the land. And Visalia is at a slightly higher elevation. And then after Flutie gets through some of her difficulties, she also stands on a higher plane. Okay. What is the moral dilemma of the Dome of Heaven? In Jan Martel's Life of Pi, it is, how do you stay in a boat with a tiger of your human nature on the ocean of this world and not get eaten? It's another thought I identify with in this film, Making Experience. How do you not get eaten by something bigger than you? What are you looking for? What do you want? Jesus asked in John 1:3, I want to make a film. I want to go to Visalia, Oklahoma with $40,000 of my own money and another $20,000 in donation and saving and make a film that would cost at least three times what I have. Early November, I was in Flagstaff on my way from Kansas to Los Angeles on another project. I had to stop for car repairs at a Chevy dealer. I had been in contact with the Screen Actors Guild because you have to do that when you use SAG actors. SAG emailed me a low-budget contract. It was 39 pages. The printer ran out of ink at the car dealer before I printed it all out. I emailed back, I can't handle this. They sent me an ultra-low-budget contract. I signed it and returned it to the agent. 1 week before I want to start filming, still without a crew, I drive to Lawrence, Kansas, because there was a film crew there that I heard about. They're called Through a Glass. I talked with them. They said, it's not possible to do this, you know, for them to up and move. And I just kept talking, and pretty soon they were on their way. And they arrived in Visalia on December 7th. I rent a four-bedroom house outside Visalia the first night, and there were six of us in the house. A cow breaks the wellhead. This is out in the middle of the prairie. We are without water, which means you can't even flush the toilet. I wake at 4 in the morning. I hear sleet against the window. And we had to make, on the morning of December 8th, we start over the icy road some 30 miles from Visalia to Tologa to film our first scene in the Dewey County Courthouse, which you will see here. At the house in the country, which is the second house I rent, the toilet won't work there either. I rent a porta potty, which has to be brought down from Woodward. Each day I ask what disaster will be this day. It was bitter cold. A mower wouldn't start for one scene. One of the characters, Luther, who my brother actually plays, he mows day and night, winter and summer, just around the field. But we came up with a better scene than if it had started. So, I mean, I could go on and on. And afterwards, we can discuss more of the heartaches of filmmaking if you're so inclined to hear. Go on with how amazing this film was. Molly, who was the second wife of Franklin, she worked in the Visalia Chamber of Commerce. I just picked her up off the street. And we were sitting in the Visalia restaurant one morning, and I didn't have that in dialogue, and I needed, that was another place, I needed some dialogue. And I said, tell me a story when they were a boy. And Mark Randall, her brother, was sitting there and said, when I was a kid, I'd have to follow my father in the truck, and I could hardly see over the steering wheel. I mean, I just wrote down word for word what he said. And that judge is a real judge in Oklahoma. And I went into his office, and it must have been October. I made so many trips down there. And I said, I would like to film in the courtroom. He said, I don't allow a camera in here. And I just kept talking and talking. And he said, well, maybe an hour. And we were in his courtroom 4 hours that one morning. You do not know how long it takes to film one scene. You just go over it and over it and over it and over it. And the sheriff is the real sheriff there in Visalia. So people just showed up. It was just, I want to say it was just a miracle. the nightmare that was a miracle. And if you want to make a film, just write the book first. Wes's very words are, I mean, they're right here. I shortened it a little bit. You could tell me a story, Flutie said as she watched her father at a car. He shrugged and shook his head as if thinking there were no stories left. He had to drop them, the way ships threw cargo overboard in a storm, the way wagons moving west had to leave trunks and furniture. And I marked out that last line because in a film it's got to be short and succinct. What could he give her, just one story, she asked? Not even that. Can I make up a story, he said, she asked. Do what you want, he said. Your grandmother had nothing but stories. Does that sound familiar? So, do you have questions or comments or... Yes.
You said times that I noticed. when things weren't happening the way that they needed to happen, that you just kept talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, a person who's very interested in invention and strategies that the writers use and multimedia producers use. And so I'm wondering if you might talk a little bit about what's all packed in the phrase, I just kept talking.
Well, I went down to the Dewey County Courthouse, which is 30 miles away. Remember, we had to drive there through the sleet that first morning. And he was trying two men. And they happened to be Native American, by the way. And so I sat outside, and I heard all this, and it took him quite a while. So they came out, and I went in, and I said, can I talk to you just a minute? I said, I'm making this independent film about a family and about the struggle for existence and survival. And I'd like for you to be in the film because I sat out there and heard your voice. You know, I'm flattering him in a way. But it was true. He was a wonderful man. Could I have found a better judge if he'd have been an actor?
Right.
And he said, and I knew this was true, you can't film in a courtroom. And I said, well, it's a fictional story. A young man has stolen some car parts from his father, and he gets sentenced because of tough love. The father doesn't want him to continue on his life of crime, and he's trying to cut it off. Mm-hmm. And by the way, his wife is German, and Sylvia Koeffler is a woman in Kansas City who I knew that she was from. She's actually from Austria, and I needed a woman who spoke German, and there she was. I mean, how things just fell into place again and again. So I'm in the courtroom, and I just keep talking. How long would it take, he said. Well, you know, we have to set up the cameras, and then we have to shoot a scene several times for the camera angles. And he said, well, maybe an hour. And then we got there that morning. And as I said, it really did take 4 hours we were there. In another scene, one of the school teachers at Visai had a little scene to show the difficulty Franklin had had in school. And she was out there. She said, I'm so nervous. I don't know what I'm doing. I said, they're going to film this scene 15 times. And by the time you get through the 15th scene, you won't care about anything. It'll be just as natural. And truly, it was. You know, she starts off real stiff, and then the next shoot was a little easier, and then a little easier. And finally, she walks into the garage with confidence. Franklin, we had a hard time in school. And went on and on. That was another dialogue I wrote once the film. It's not in the book at all. So the sheriff, he's another wonderful man, the Visai sheriff. I mean, could I have found a better sheriff? And another thing, when they were shooting the fighting scene, Noah is actually quite a bit bigger and quite a bit younger than Wes. And so, and they had to shoot that scene about five times, so they're out there rolling on the ground. So Noah had to let up a little bit, although Wes did hold his own. And then we didn't have any place. There is one garage in town, but he's very busy with farmers' tractors and old cars. And it really wasn't a good place to film. But the banker at the Visai Bank had a house with this huge garage on it, and he let us film there. So that's another thing that was just given to us. And they're all going to get many thanks at the end of the film. I already have a scroll down of credits and acknowledgments and thanks to friends who sent some money when I really needed it. Money is the big thing when you're making a film. Are you interested in filmmaking? Is that why you're here, or you have to be here for a class, I guess? But it was something, and you'll face this too in your lives, those of you who are young. You'll be up against something that you know is much, much bigger than anything you could do on your own, and you just have to find courage, and your whole self will tell you, don't do this. Run from it. If I had better sense, I may have run. But it, as I said, once you get into it, it just fell into place, and now I'm waiting for more funds. We're going to go back mid-April and finish it. I go over to Lawrence Thursday. He's already got 90 minutes of what we shot in a week. So, yes.
Will you be the one that's in the editing room?
I don't know how to work the editing. They had to buy a hard drive. It was $600. It sets, you know, like this, that they put all the footage on. And I don't know how to work that. But I will be there. He had a double voiceover in here that I did not like, you know, when the judge was speaking. I want to clear that up. Yeah, I didn't like that, so I'm going to be there. That's another reason. There was a film crew in Oklahoma that I met with, and I didn't really like them. I could, but some of the things they said, I thought, can I turn this group loose on a small town? Because this was about 8 people, sometimes 9, the film crew alone, you know, and then the actors. I had about 20 people that went into the restaurant every night. So, and then they had, there was no wardrobe, and Wes had this Kansas shirt, and of course we're in Oklahoma, so now I have to think up as we go back, write some, why is he wearing a Kansas shirt, sweatshirt? So, what? Yeah, that's what I'm gonna, I've already working on some dialogue, so. Well, yes.
Did you have to buy a lot of the camera equipment and stuff?
No, that came with, through a glass is a professional. So that's why I knew, I didn't want a group in Oklahoma because it's 8 hours down there and back. And I wanted Lawrence, Kansas, I can get there in, I don't know, 45 minutes. So that was another reason that I chose them. And they had their own equipment, they rented a lot. The biggest expense was them, $24,000 for a week. And then on top of that, I had the food and the hotel. I was putting up, you know, about 14 people in a hotel. The budget, because I just had to do my taxes, came in just under $60,000. And that's 60%. I mean, there's another miracle. It usually costs $200,000 to do what we did. And I'm not sure really how we did it that cheaply. Well, because Wes and Noah, who's a professional actor, and Thirza, did it. They each got $5,000. I mean, that's unheard of for a week's hard work. Yes. Contemporary time? Yeah, because that's when I wrote the book. But the cars they work on are new, so I hope it kind of spans and time isn't an issue. I hope it's sort of a contemporary time. But you're right, it was. In the 1980s, when I started earning my own living, I was an artist in residence for the State Arts Council of Oklahoma. Every week I would get out my map and find Sealing and Tologa and Visalia and Lawton and Fort Sill and Altus. I stayed alive that way. I earned a living. And Visalia was the town that stayed with me for some reason. It's the land. There's voices in the land. The land has memory. The land has a voice. It was just that town that stayed with me 30 years. And when you're working on a creative project, whatever haunts you, whatever keeps coming back, you finally know that's something that you need to deal with. So it's been 30 years in the making since the inception of it, to dear Aunt Marty dying and leaving me some money. Yes?
In terms of venues to play that in, how does that work with independent films?
Every time I open my email, there's a new independent film festival. A lot of them are local. There's a big one in Kansas City, right where I live. The Kansas Film Commission, I live in Kansas, even though I made the film in Oklahoma, sends the any independent film around to the small towns in Kansas, any place that has a little independent, I mean, has a little studio, a place to show it. And then there's a film festival in Oklahoma. There's one in Michigan. They're all over. And so you start entering your film. And I don't know yet how this works. I've been so overwhelmed with the making of it. But I think if it does well one place, you move on and on. And then my dream is to have it at Sundance, because I actually wrote the script 10 years ago, 1998, 12 or 13. No, I don't. And they're in Florida. I mean, they're just Austin, Texas. They're just all over the place. But of course, you have to have your own money. And I'm sure there's entry fees and all of that. And in LA, and there's a lot of Native festivals. There's one in Tucson in May, and I'm going to take hopefully the full film by then. So I'm just starting out, you know. And then I give a lot of talks, like I was going to read from my work here. And so I said to Susan, I think, I could talk about filmmaking, you know, a big expert here on filmmaking. It's really, really, it's pretty funny that I'm doing this. And she said, okay, I think it was you, which is where my interest is right now. So I will start whenever I give maybe Native Studies programs will use it in their study. I don't know. I haven't looked that far yet. I'm still struggling just to get through with the making of the film, as if that wasn't enough.
And you said you're going back in April. Does the change in the light concern you at all?
Yes. Yes. The crew, I said there was 8 people there, the sound, the lighting, the prop person, the film, and then there was one woman who just wrote down what everybody wore in a certain scene, so if we would have to go back and reshoot. But this moves through the school year anyway, and she actually goes to college once she gets through high school, so it covers about 3 years. And so hopefully that movement through the seasons will somehow work out.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't me. It was the photographers. A lot of the times I just stood in the background. My responsibility was getting the dialogue and making sure the actors had their dialogue down so that we could shoot 5 times, you know, working on the angle and the lighting. Now, that was them, and it was just amazing the way they did it all. There's a director of photography, and he's the one in there saying, "Say it again." Yes.
I know there's a director of photography, but you wrote this book and then the script. Did you have scenes in your head as you were doing that? And
oh, yes.
The scenes on the screen look like the ones in your head?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. You know, when you write a script, you get it finished, and then you have to tear it up because everything that is filmed, for instance, in a church, you do it in one day. So Franklin gets married twice. One wedding just followed the other. And we had the audience just get up and change places, and a couple of new people came in, and we asked a couple more to wait out. And then all those in the garage were filmed in a couple of days, you know, and then you moved out to the farmhouse, and then you moved here. So it's all cut up, you know, for practicalities, because it's a lot to move the cameras and the sound and all that equipment. I mean, they just had two trucks full of equipment, that a lot of it they rented. I mean, it was a major thing. It was a real set, you know. So, yes.
So it just took 1 week to do everything that you had.
That's right. 90 minutes worth of film. Another thing they said is that we can't do all this. You know, they said we usually take all day to film half of what we have done here. And so each night I said, tomorrow we're going to travel just as far through the script. And they did, because I was pushing them. You know, I was the director, so I got to say. And then you have to figure out what you're going to do each day and tell everybody. And film is not a lot of fun. Script writing is not as much fun as a novel or poetry, because it's, I don't know, it's a script. It's not an end in itself. It's torn up for something else. So the aesthetic that I like to work with wasn't there. Yes? Yeah. And I did that in 1998. What is that? 12 years, 13, I'm not. And then when I got down there, I saw all the holes in it. And so that's why I didn't get a lot of sleep. I really did dream it. I would wake up in the morning, you know, with knowing where to go and what to do. So.
And you feel that it's maybe one more weekend? Mm-hmm. Is that what you need to
get it done? Yes, yes. Hopefully. I mean, if we did all that in 90 minutes in a week, I'm sure we can pick it up. And I know I was on the plane, I was reading through it, getting the dialogue down so that when we go through, you can just move through it quickly.
Do you want it to be about 90 minutes?
I hope it's longer than that, maybe 120. So, well, I appreciate you all coming.